from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Iran targets the troops, the Supreme Court takes up the life issue, and a congressional report on China's abuses. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Well, the big news story this past week was Iran, and here's how Family Research Council President Tony Perkins addressed the short-lived conflict on Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch Live.
Last night, Iran launched more than a dozen missiles at two Iraqi bases, which house U.S. troops in retaliation for the American airstrike that killed a top Iranian general last week. The president addressed the situation earlier today in a nationwide address.
As we continue to evaluate options in response to Iranian aggression, the United States will immediately impose additional punishing economic sanctions on the Iranian regime. These powerful sanctions will remain until Iran changes its behavior.
Joining me now with more is Congressman Mo Brooks. He represents the 5th District of Alabama, and he serves on the Armed Services Committee. Congressman Brooks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
My pleasure.
Your thoughts on what the president had to share with the nation today?
Short term, the economic sanctions may work. Long term, I don't believe they have much of a chance of having the desired effect. And the reason I say that is because you have to look at the motivation for the Iranian country's bad conduct. And that motivation, in my judgment, is based on their adherence to fundamentalist Islam. That is a very aggressive ideology, and they believe that they are commanded by God to do whatever must be done to either convert non-believers to Islam or to exterminate those who are not. Who are on the extermination list would be Christians, Jews, atheists, agnostics, just go down the list. And so when you've got a nation that is motivated by a fundamentalist religious ideology, I'd be surprised if economic sanctions cause them to discard their interpretations of the Quran.
I mean, Congressman, when you look at what we've been dealing with really since 1979, and we've every administration, Republican, Democrat, has basically had a containment policy as it pertained to Iran, this being the first that's really kind of directly challenged it. I mean, ultimately, is it going to require a regime change?
It's going to require either a regime change in Iran or a change in the ideology that drives Iran to kill so many people. And when I say kill so many people, they either do it directly or they do it indirectly through their surrogates. They have shown a devout commitment to their belief system, and their belief system calls for the extermination of various peoples around the globe. And they have been aggressively pursuing that for four decades. And I don't see anything that has caused Iran's leadership to lessen their drive to fulfill what they believe is Allah's commandment.
Now, Congressman Brooks, the Iranians suggesting that this is just the first retaliatory strike, that more is to come. What do we know about what they are planning or what they might be up to?
Well, I just participated in a classified briefing by a number of our intelligence, military, and State Department officials. I cannot disclose any of that, but Iran does have a variety of options. Short term, they may, and this is me speaking, not classified information, short term, they may try to act like they desire peace. They may act like they're going to disregard their fundamentalist beliefs. But long term, I anticipate that their strategy will be to continue to impose on the rest of the world their religious ideology as they interpret it.
How serious of a threat militarily are they to the United States and to our allies?
In my judgment, Iran is the most serious military threat on the globe to the United States of America. And the reason I say that is because Iran is seeking military weaponry that puts them in an exclusive club, that club that has nuclear weapons and the missile systems needed to deliver them to various parts of the planet. And what has kept the peace amongst nuclear powers on the planet over the decades has been something called the mutually assured destruction doctrine.
Right.
If we attack you, you attack us, both countries are exterminated. It's in effect suicide to launch a first strike. Therefore, there has been no first strike.
Right.
It's a deterrence.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you've had Iranian leaders over the years who have made statements that suggest that the destruction of Iran is not sufficient deterrence to cause Iran to attack first if, in so doing, they can take out Israel, with whom they call the little Satan, and take out the United States, whom they call the great Satan. And so if the mutually assured destruction doctrine does not work to deter Iran from actually using those nuclear weapons to impose their religious ideology, well, that's a situation, a circumstance that the world has not faced previously.
Right.
And I don't know how the world would react when you've got a nation that is making statements that they are willing to sacrifice themselves in the name of Allah if in so doing they can destroy the United States and destroy Israel.
Yeah,
and under those circumstances, I would not want to take a chance that they didn't mean what they said when they said that they would be willing to commit suicide if they could take down the United States and Israel with them.
Congressman Brooks, one final question for you. At this moment in time, with what we know and what we understand, how serious is the threat from Iran to the United States?
Well, right now, Iran does not have nuclear capability, as far as we know. Iran does not have intercontinental ballistic missiles that would enable Iran warheads to reach the United States of America. So right now, the United States is about as secure as we can be, keeping in mind that we had 9/11 19 years ago, and we had over 1,000, well, we had thousands of Americans killed through terrorist activities that to some degree have been linked to Iran, although I don't know if Iran was one of the puppet masters that endeavor. And so we have to be vigilant about terrorist activities. Our men and women in uniform in the Middle East and certain parts of Asia and Africa, they have to be mindful that Iran behind the scenes is trying to attack and kill American men and women in uniform.
Yes.
But outside of those threats, I think we're fairly secure.
Yes.
However, that's today.
Right. And this may be the moment in which we need to address it head on. Congressman, we got to leave it there. We're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk with you. Folks, find out more about Congressman Noel Brooks. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Congressman Mike Johnson up next, talking about an amicus brief that 207 members of Congress has filed on the life issue. That's next.
Join FRC Live via webcast for the 15th annual ProLifeCon Digital Action Summit. On January 24th from FRC's headquarters in Washington, you'll hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists who will share how they view social media and other digital tools to further the pro-life message. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning best practices from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 24th at 8 a.m. at ProLifeCon.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, yesterday, Congressman Steve Scalise, the minority whip, was on discussing a friend of the court brief that was submitted by 207 members of Congress on a Louisiana law dealing with abortion clinics and the requirement that doctors have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles. Now, this is obviously driven by a desire to protect women in case something goes wrong, that doctor has connections with a hospital. This didn't just come out of the blue. Although this is now going to find its way before the Supreme Court because it's been challenged, this actually goes back, and I think I may have made reference to this yesterday, goes back almost 20 years to when I was in the state legislature, and a young attorney just out of law school had a client that nearly died as a result of an abortion. And working with a reporter who actually had been an intern for me when I was a reporter, she did some undercover work and revealed the unsanitary conditions of these abortion clinics, of this one in particular. And that laid the groundwork for us to pass the first Abortion Clinic Regulation Act in the state of Louisiana, which was the first iteration. I think now we're looking at like the third. Well, joining me now is that young attorney who now happens to be the chairman of the Republican Study Committee here in Congress. He represents the area of Shreveport, Louisiana, and he's a frequent guest on the program, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. Congressman Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's a privilege to be with you as always, and I can't believe it's been 20 years. It seems like in some ways that was just yesterday, but it was quite a saga, wasn't it?
Yeah, neither one of us had gray hair back then.
that's right.
But this is, of course, when we did that, it was actually controversial on both the left and the right that we would bring these abortion clinics that at that time had no oversight into the same law that oversaw the ambulatory surgical centers. Just basically, this was driven by a desire to ensure basic health care standards for women.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was one of my first cases out of law school, I think, as you mentioned, and it began as just an injury case. This poor lady had been maimed inside the Delta Women's Clinic in Baton Rouge, which at the time was the largest abortion provider in our state. They did a huge volume of abortions, and they were pretty notorious for having substandard practices. And when we began to do the discovery in her case, to do a little investigation to figure out what exactly happened, we realized that there was actually a loophole in the law. And I couldn't believe it when we first stumbled upon it. And I, you know, took it to you. We talked about it. You were a young state rep at the time. And we were stunned that apparently back in 1973, right, in the aftermath of Roe v. Wade, a number of states, and apparently ours included, decided that they would remove the abortion clinics from coverage under the regular ambulatory surgical center laws and hold them in abeyance for a while to just figure out, they said at the time, what to do after Roe v. Wade. And apparently in our state and in a number of others, they never went back and filled in that gap. There was a loophole in the law. So abortion clinics from somewhere around 1973, apparently to around 1998 in our state, went completely unregulated. So, of course, they were having horrible, unsanitary conditions. The video that you referenced was the CBS TV affiliate, WAFB in Baton Rouge. They were able to get a camera inside the Delta Women's Clinic after a procedure day, and they got video, a famous video now,
right,
of rusted surgical instruments that they were using on these poor women. It was just a terrible, a complete health crisis. And it started a series of domino events that we're still seeing the effect of even today.
Yeah, and I remember that video. First time in the history of the state legislature, we actually played that video on the House floor there in Louisiana, which led to the overwhelming approval of the clinic regulatory provision, inserting it or reinserting it into the ambulatory surgical center regulations. Of course, we fast forward to where we are today. There were a couple of amendments to strengthen that, the admitting privileges within within the 30-mile radius. That's been challenged. That now will take it before the Supreme Court. You, along with Steve Scalise, were key in getting your colleagues to sign on to this. What was the basis or the core of the argument that you made in that brief with the Supreme Court?
Well, when all of those dominoes began to fall back in early 1999, when you began to pass the enabling legislation to allow for clinic regulations in our state, a number of other states soon followed suit. Texas did, and a number of others. And all of those regulations were immediately challenged by the abortion industry. They simply didn't want to be regulated. Why, you know, this is a cash cow operation. They had no oversight whatsoever. Why would they want to have any of these provisions in place? And so they challenged every one of them over and over and over. And for decades now, all of the states and all the common sense health and safety regulations that are put in place by state legislatures to protect women, the safety and health of women who are in the most vulnerable, many of the most vulnerable situation times of their lives, they've all been challenged in court. And the abortion industry, the cartel, as some people call it, mm-hmm. has been very successful because they cherry pick their venues. They go to federal courts that will be favorable, and they argue that it's a violation of one's right to choose and all that, an undue burden. And they've had so many of these common sense regulations struck down in the courts. So what the present case, the Louisiana case that is being argued at the Supreme Court now, is a direct challenge to that. Not only is it a challenge to this common sense restriction that an abortion provider should have to have admitting privileges to a hospital within 30 miles, it's that specific regulation that's under review, but it is also the larger question of standing. And the Supreme Court has agreed to hear that issue. And standing means the arguments will be if the abortion industry itself has the right to challenge common sense safety regulations, or if it has to be someone who is actually affected by it,
right,
like a woman who may be adversely affected one way or the other. If we get that second question answered the right way, it will be a dramatic change and a shift in the whole landscape of abortion regulation and abortion law in America.
Going back 47 years, it's going to be fascinating to see where this goes and to think it started 20 years ago with a first-year lawyer right out of law school. Congressman Mike Johnson, thanks so much for joining us. We're out of time, but I'm sure we're going to revisit this issue.
We certainly will. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you.
You can find out more about FRC's position on life and this case when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program, as well as support our ongoing efforts with a one-time gift or by becoming a Stand member. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's tonyperkins.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday of this week, a bipartisan congressional commission urged the Trump administration to levy sanctions against China for, among other things, the repression of Uyghur Muslims. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the commission's findings is the representative from the 4th District of New Jersey, Chris Smith.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I know it's a busy day on Capitol Hill, so I appreciate you taking a few moments to join us. But this is an issue that you've been talking about for a long time. We've been discussing this. But the situation in China is becoming worse by the day for religious minorities.
It absolutely is. Our report makes it very clear that every religious belief, from Christianity to Falun Gong to Tibet Buddhism to the Muslims in the Xinjiang region, the Uyghurs as they're known as, are being harshly, aggressively repressed. Matter of fact, for the Uyghurs, there's between 1 to 2 million people in concentration camps, clearly constituting crimes against humanity. And the use of these, we have not seen this kind of mass internment of millions since the Holocaust. Torture, rape, sexual abuse, forced abortions of women being held in the internment camps. They already have forced abortion throughout the entire country, but now in a particularly genocidal way, they're just killing these children because then there's fewer of those children in the society. And then forced labor, they're using surveillance. Like no surveillance state has ever done it, particularly in this so-called Xinjiang Autonomous Region. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's, we've never seen anything like this in modern days. And it's Xi Jinping who's directing it all. There were some, as you know, Tony, leaked papers that showed that he, you know, himself has said, show absolutely no mercy in this crackdown. And it is part of this sinization campaign of, again, making Christians rewrite the Bible, comport with every Marxist-Leninist ideal or communist ideology that they have, or else go to prison and be tortured or killed.
Yeah, on at the end of December, the reports coming out of China suggest that there's even a further crackdown where orders coming from the government ordering churches, people of faith, to align themselves with the Communist Party. And I quote from, again, this is news sources saying that this document, it was put forth by the Communist Party, quote, religious organizations must adhere to the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, observe the constitution, laws, regulations, ordinances, and policies, adhere to the principle of independence and self-government, adhere to the directives on religion in China, implementing the values of socialism, essentially ordering them to put the party above Christ or whomever, whatever deity they may worship.
You stated it perfectly, Tony. That is the problem. Socialism trumps all else. And again, if you don't comport, if you don't go along with this, you will be harassed and probably incarcerated. And the use of torture is endemic in the Chinese prison system. That's how they get people to crack and to give up other members, perhaps of their faith group, of their Bible study. I mean, it is totalitarianism on steroids, and it's especially targeted, and you know from your work with the Religious Freedom Commission, it is especially targeted to people of faith.
Congressman Smith, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's probably, I don't know if there's anyone that's been in Congress longer that has been on this issue of human rights, religious freedom, and China in particular. And so I know you've been tracking this, so you've got a frame of reference here. What did you see in this report and the information that you combed through to actually to promulgate this report? Was there anything in here that just shocked you to the level of the atrocities that we're now seeing perpetrated on the people of China?
Well, I think, you know, when we did the Uyghur Human Rights Act, and I introduced it in the House, and there was a Senate version as well, just like with the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, the idea of anything that even looks a little bit like freedom or oxygen of people exercising their universally recognized human rights, it's being crushed like during the time of Mao Zedong. And people are a little slow in waking up to that. This report hopefully will at least shake some people out of that lackadaisical, you know, can it really be this bad? Yes, it's worse than what we actually know. And I say that because the information we have is like a tip of the iceberg. Every time you look at something, you find out even more problems are occurring. For example, the rounding up of family members. There are 11 people who Radio Free Asia who are Uyghur people. Their entire families, hundreds, are rounded up and put into prison. Rabia Kadir, one of the great Uyghur human rights activists, her entire extended family, as an immediate family, is now in a gulag, being tortured, being mistreated every single day. There's never been anything like that where whole families, and this is why I suggest this is a genocide. They are trying to destroy the faith of people who happen to be Muslim. They're trying to co-opt and, I believe, destroy the Christian faith and all other faiths in China. I mean, when you talk about rewriting the Bible to make it read like a socialist document, there's a very serious problem there. And these pastors, these wonderful pastors throughout China, and I've met many of them over the years, along with my good friend Frank Wolf, when we've traveled there when he was still in Congress, they're now, you know, being thrown into prison, harassed, being made to put cameras if they were recognized by the government, which very few are. But now even those in the Three Self movement and the Patriotic Catholic Church Association, they too are being systematically destroyed by Xi Jinping. So there's, you know, this is Mao Zedong type of repression. And we enable some of it with our transfer of technology. And the new bills that we're doing make it clear that we don't want no part, no complicity in this repression. Matter of fact, the Trump administration, to its credit, blacklisted 28 government agencies and businesses by putting them on the Commerce Department's entity list because we don't want to sell. The Magnitsky Act needs to be used even more than it has, but it has been used to focus on individuals who are doing these terrible things to say, one, you can't get a visa to come here, and you can't do business here. So, you know, we got to, and of course the UN and others need to do more, which they have not done in combating this terrible human rights tragedy.
Before we run out of time, you use the commission uses a term that says believes China may be guilty of crimes against humanity. Crimes against humanity is just short of the declaration of genocide.
Yes.
Your hope of the action that the UN and others might take as a result of this report?
Well, the Rome Statute, in Article 7 of the Rome Statute of the ICC, International Criminal Court, which obviously the ICC has some problems itself, but frankly, it articulates a number of things, and there's a list of 11 acts that may constitute crimes against humanity. They're doing them all. I mean, the pervasive use of torture, the mass incarceration of so many people who happen to be Muslim, and then taking their children and putting them in orphanages and other places, and then indoctrinating them. The forced renunciation of faith, which we've seen throughout all of China and including places like Vietnam, is now, you know, in high gear to get people so they don't believe anymore. So this is an all-out assault. I think it's genocide, but it's at least crimes against humanity.
Well, again, a shocking report, comprehensive in its look at what is happening in China. And Congressman Chris Smith, again, want to thank you for your leadership on bringing a spotlight on this issue of the human rights abuses of China and the trampling upon that fundamental right of religious freedom. Thanks so much for taking
Tony,
time
thank
to join
you very
us.
Much, and for your leadership as well. It's extraordinary.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.